minus 5, minus 4, minus 3, minus 2, X minus 1. Fire.
Lights out, everybody.
The creaking door.
Dimension X.
Inner Sanctum Mystery.
Minus 1.
Dark fantasy.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Sci-Fi and Horror, brought to you by Duane Old Time Radio. Sci-Fi and Horror features some of the best programs from the golden age of radio, including X-1, Orbiter X, Dimension X, Slot X's, Lights Out, Ray Bradbury, Dark Fantasy, and many, many more. Also, my podcasts are free of ads, so you can enjoy the programs commercial-free. If you would like to donate a few dollars to help me cover the cost of creating these weekly posts, you can donate to my channel. On the bottom of each post, there is a donation link in your preferred podcast player. Anything you donate is extremely helpful and appreciated.
Hello, we are here to welcome the month of February 2026 on Duane Old Time Radio Sci-Fi and Horror. This month, we are going to start with Orbit 10. I actually aired this in the very beginning when I started this podcast, so this is a repeat. I'm going to air it again because it was such a long time ago. Orbit 10, it's a 6-part storyline. This week I'm going to air the first 3 parts, and next week I'm going to air the last 3 parts. So this week we have The Unseeing Eye, that's part episode number 1, then The Cylinder, and we're going to end it with The Power. And these all air between April 21, however you want to say it, and May 26, 1961. And these are from BBC Radio.
From London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Hayes. Episode 1, The Unseeing Eye.
In Fleet Street, they say a good story gets its facts across. So facts it's going to be. My name's Tom Lambert, and I work in a daily paper that maybe came through your letterbox this morning. It's a good many years now since I wrote my last article on the cosmic noise and what followed. But it's my belief that the whole inside story never was told. That was why a few weeks ago I tracked down the man who lives with the whole truth, Dr. Hayward Petrie. I found him in an Oxfordshire village. He's retired now. And we talked about the old days for a long time. I came away with an empty notebook, but not empty-handed. I have here 6 reels of recording tape which Dr. Petrie lent me. His own recordings made 10 years ago, dictated by him, alone in his study, remembering. I've played these tapes. It's all here, better than I could tell it. Our glimpse across a weird threshold on the rim of space, where there should be nothing but eternal frozen darkness. Yet where there was something more. We're going to hear the first of the Petrie recordings. For the moment, I need do no more than press the switch and let Dr. Petrie and the facts speak for themselves. Ready?
Notes, first reel. My name is John Hayward Petrie. I'm a doctor of science, and my purpose in making these observations is to... I can't lecture to a machine. I'll do this my own way or not at all. Now, where to begin? I must go back. Kensington, London. Some years ago, the old Imperial Museum in South Kensington was turned into the Commonwealth College of Science. It worked well, the college. Some of the old vision of empire must have lingered, though, because there was a department to study a new potential empire, space. The School of Astrophysics. East wing, 3rd floor, quite handy for the canteen. I was its head in those days, and a keen crowd we were. It really began on a grey November day in the college's second year. I was lecturing my course that morning, and among the heads bent dutifully over notebooks were two that, with me, were to experience things that would make us doubt our sanity. But none of us knew that then. To summarize, the effects of cosmic radiation, filtered by the Earth's atmosphere and observed in relation to botany and geology, are understood well enough. But the source of these radiations remains one of the best-guarded secrets of the universe. Well, that'll be all for today, ladies and gentlemen. We shall not now meet again until next January, by which time I trust I shall have received an admirably learned thesis from each one of you. Good morning.
What, my dear Miss Ryder, is that? A new form of lecture shorthand?
Hello, Cliff. This?
Yeah.
Oh, just a doodle.
Some doodle. I've been watching it develop for the last half hour. It took me right out of myself and the lecture.
Well, if anything, it represents the state of mind of a second-year student with 2 months to produce a thesis and who hasn't a clue for a subject.
Sure, Liz. Me too. Well, that wraps it up for this term. Do we drown our sorrows in canteen tea?
I think we do. Let's go before the queue reaches halfway to Marble Arch. Don't forget your notes, Cliff. You're going to need them.
Don't remind me.
Am I the trade, Bill? Want some hot tea down your neck?
Sorry.
Well, I guess we can squeeze in here by the window.
Okay.
Have a chocolate biscuit?
Thanks. You know, Cliff, it's hard to believe sometimes.
That this is tea? Believe me, in no other civilized land do they make tea quite
no,
like this.
No, out there, Kensington, with the mist. It hasn't changed in 100 years. And here we sit in the middle of 6 floors of electronics.
And this is a science college, not a school for romantic lady poets. Now, back to Earth, Liz. Petrie won't accept a sonnet for a thesis. 10,000 words. That's a lot of words.
And a lot of hours in my bedsitter in Chelsea. And a lot of shillings for the gas meter.
You're not trying to get home for Christmas?
Cliff, Daddy works for a copper mine. He doesn't own one. He paid my fare here from Rhodesia. And if I don't pass at the end of next year, well, I can see myself walking back.
Look, if one of us is doomed to fail, Liz, it certainly won't be you. And Montreal is no bus ride away. My people run a hardware store. So I guess I sweat it out in the college hostel. We'll send each other Christmas cards.
And you can take me to see the Christmas tree in Trafalgar Square.
You've got yourself a date. Well, well. Now, why is our colleague from down under fighting his way over here? You'll make it, Whitey.
Hi, Liz. Got a message for you two. The prof wants to see you in his study.
Dr. Petrie?
Yep, he's waiting. Don't rub him the wrong way for Pete's sake. Many a good scholarship now hangs in the balance.
Dr. Petrie is a pet.
Maybe to you he is. There's a difference.
We better go, Liz. Thanks, Whitey.
Okay.
What have we done to deserve this? Nothing, I hope. Come on.
If we can carve our way through.
We had to have a corner table. Excuse us, please. Don't block the gangway. Thanks.
Come in. Ah, Mr. Boyd and Miss Ryder. You got my message?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Good. Sit down, please.
Thank you, sir.
Now, I have your course records here. I've been glancing through them. They may not on the whole suggest that you're the two most brilliantly gifted students of your year.
We don't think so either, Doctor. We just hope we're good enough to get through all three.
Yes. Still, you do have something that's rare, even here. Inquiring minds. Now, look here, if neither of you are committed for Christmas, how would you like to spend it 80 miles out in the Atlantic?
The Atlantic?
Well, not afloat, on an island.
Well, sir, I guess... But we have theses to get started work on.
Well, perhaps the two can be combined. I have a letter here from an old colleague of mine. Yes, Professor Campbell McLaren. He's in charge of the radio telescope that three of our universities built between them.
The one in the Outer Hebrides?
Yes, it's on the Isle of Skara, about 40 miles west of Barra. It's a very powerful apparatus, more adaptable than the one at Jodrell Bank. McLaren's been working there in splendid isolation for 2 years, studying cosmic radiation.
Has he made any progress?
Well, McLaren is the least excitable person alive, and that's why the voluble style of his letter puzzles me. However, the point is, he wants a second opinion on some findings. He suggests that I spend a few weeks there and bring a couple of students to assist. You can make observations, take notes, and I will accept in exchange 7,000 words on radio astronomy, but not one less. Well?
I'd love to come, sir.
I'm not asking what you would love, Miss Ryder. I wish to know if you feel you would benefit from an insight into field research.
I mean, yes, I think it would be very helpful.
Good. And what about you, Mr. Byrne?
Glad if you'll count me in, too, sir. I was reading about the Skara telescope in the Scientific Journal. It has a range of 5 billion light years and can detect the fastest receding galaxies.
I'm not unaware of those facts, Mr. Byrne. I wrote that article.
Sorry, sir.
Well, now, I shall be leaving in 3 days' time. McLaren mentions November gales and advises thick clothing. I'm purchasing a garment called a duffel coat, in which I shall look quite ridiculous. He does also mention some other work outside the laid-down program. In his own well-chosen words, some wee back room messing about, which should be right up your street. Well, we shall see. Please meet me at Euston at 8 p.m. on Monday evening.
Right.
I'll make the travelling arrangements.
Thank you, sir.
Fine.
Now, I really have a great deal of work to do, so good morning to you.
We'll be there. Goodbye, sir.
Good morning, Dr. Petrie.
Good morning.
Well, how do you like that? Is that character a sheep in wolf's clothing or the other way around? Now and then he gets to be almost human, but not for long.
He's just a bit shy, that's all.
Shy? Oh, sure, and modest, too, like your Dr. Johnson was. Now, come on, we've got a lot to do before Monday.
Yes, let's go.
The Isle of Skara. A lonely, tilted granite paving stone jutting out of the ocean. Even from the steamer, we could see the radio telescope straddling the highest end like some enormous black crab, two towering pylons, and between them, the reflector, a vast upturned bowl. We went ashore at Kirkuish, the only harbour, and the only village. The island's only taxi rattled us up steep lanes and across windswept moorlands, where sheep huddled behind crumbling flint walls. It left us at the very foot of the telescope, and then it scuttled away as if nervous of the brooding monster it had dared to disturb. The three of us gazed up in silence. The wind whined through the two tall lattice towers. Slung between them in a cradle of girders, the monstrous hollow eye gazed coldly at the leaden sky. Only this steel creature was blind. It saw by listening. It was almost a relief to see the homely, white-haired figure of McLaren trotting down towards us in a flapping overcoat.
Hello there. Glad to see you again, Hayward. I saw the steamer put in. That's a big event here.
Hello, Campbell. Yes, we were just paying homage to your creation. Rather like the popular idea of an invading Martian.
Oh, don't be unkind to it. It may look a wee bit unfriendly today, but when the sun's out, it can look quite pretty.
It looks as if it might decide to eat us at any moment.
Oh, man. Oh,
Campbell, may I introduce Miss Elizabeth Ryder, Mr. Clifford Burley.
How do you do, Miss Ryder, Mr. Bowden? So you're the ones he talked into this.
That's right.
Glad to have you. Now, let's get inside. It never stops blowing on Skara. I think we may as well go straight up to the signal box.
The signal box?
Aye, the control room. It's slung up there, just under the bowl. It's safer than it looks. There's a lift.
A lift?
Oh, we have every modern convenience. Now, watch your step. These paths are slippery.
Right.
We will.
A lift inside one of these supporting towers whirred upwards. We crossed a narrow catwalk, where Elizabeth looked down once and didn't try it again. And then we were in a warm, spacious, glass-paneled laboratory. One felt still on the ground up there, until you looked out and saw all the island, the Atlantic below you, or up, where the bowl of the telescope blotted out the whole sky.
This is where we work. And this is my assistant who shares my exile here, Peter Garrick.
How do you do?
Pleased to meet you, Dr. Petrie. I've read all your papers on solar physics.
Oh, well, I'm glad someone has.
And Miss Ryder and Mr. Bourne from the CCS in Kensington.
How do you do?
Well, now, you all know the form, of course. We can either send out impulses ourselves and they're bounced back from bodies in their path, or we can receive short waves from any source that emits them. How's that analysis coming on, Peter? Is Alpha Centauri still complaining?
Yes, quite a disturbance. It's coming through very steadily.
We're tracking one of our celestial neighbors, the star Alpha Centauri, a mere 5 light-years away. He seems to be having a little cosmic indigestion, throwing out masses of white-hot hydrogen. I like to hear him doing it.
Love to.
Let's have the audio range, Peter.
Right. I'll bring him in.
Aye, there he is. The sound of a furnace hot enough to shrivel the earth, but too far for any ordinary telescope to see. Of course, we're not hearing the physical activity, just the radiations it gives off.
Yes, quite so.
Swing off to a general bearing, Peter. Let's have the third program for a change.
Anything in particular?
No, the full orchestra.
Right.
Well, look at that. The bowl up there is turning, and we're going with it.
The whole structure is mounted on a circular track.
There are 20 electric motors driving this lot. When we're observing, the whole thing creeps automatically.
I see.
Has to, of course, to counteract the Earth's rotation.
Yes, quite.
This bearing ought to give us a fair selection. Just a moment.
There it is, Hayward. The creaking of the universe. The voices of a million galaxies. Some of those signals began their journey before men learned to live in caves and chip flints, and they've only just arrived. But all that is dead noise, given out by bodies much like our own sun. Aye, and there are more things in heaven and earth.
Campbell, what do you mean?
I'm not sure that I know myself.
Oh.
There, you see, it goes on tape and into these computers for analysis. And these pens scratch it out in graph form, mile after mile of it.
Oh, you research people have all the fun. I'd like one of these in Kensington. Well, tomorrow we'll get down to it in detail.
Surely. I'd be glad of your advice on one or two problems. Well, shall we go down?
Yes.
We have our quarters in those concrete buildings near the cliff. We live well enough, thanks to Mrs. McWhirter, our resident cook. She's promised us dinner at 7:00. Peter, at 8:00, will you go on to bearing C-60?
C-60? Tonight, sir?
Yes, tonight.
Very good.
I'd hang on to the handrail when you get outside. The wind seems to be getting up. One of our problems is the rain that collects in the bowl. On a bad day, the drainage ducts have to cope with something like 6 tons of water.
McLaren's living room, with its chintz curtains and cheerful fire, seemed that night the coziest place on earth. We might have been in the heart of London, save for the wind and the waves pounding on the rocks below. And all the time we were conscious of that vast steel monster towering into the darkness outside. And McLaren himself seemed uneasy and kept glancing at his watch. And at 8:15, he said,
Hayward, I've been doing a little work of my own, a sort of sideline. I think it might interest you. We could take a look now, if you'd care to.
I said I would. So McLaren led me out of the concrete block, and we dashed through the rain to another which housed the electric generators, then down some bare steps into a series of basement rooms. The last and largest was not as elaborately equipped as the signal box, but there were control consoles, a computer in a shiny grey cubicle, and another recording machine, its stylus scratching a jagged red line on a creeping roll of graph paper. And as soon as he closed the door, I realized that McLaren had only been keeping up his cheery manner with an effort.
I dare say you're surprised to find another laboratory down here. The universities don't know about this yet.
Well, I knew you were keen on investigating cosmic radiation, Campbell, but...
No, this is something else. Aye. Now, where to begin? Look at that pen, Hayward. Mm-hmm. See the trace it's making?
Yes, it seems fairly regular. Is it something the telescope is picking up?
Aye. Garrick's on to a certain bearing.
What do you mean?
I'll put it in a nutshell. A year ago, we noticed that a very persistent signal kept breaking in on our other recordings.
Uh-huh.
We put it down to meteor showers or the like. Then one day, for something to do, we focused accurately on them and recorded them for several hours. Garrick was curious about the results, so we fed them into the computers.
Uh-huh.
The usual variations emerged. But this time, they were in the form of a regular pattern.
No, but that's impossible. Cosmic emanations are either continuous or intermittent. There could be no system. Unless...
Aye? Unless what?
Well, unless they were from some artificial source, in some way being, well, transmitted.
We made more recordings and more. We analyzed, compared sequences, and soon we had no doubts at all. There was form and system.
No.
There could be only one thing, a means of communication. Soon we confirmed something else, the position of the source and the range.
Well, if they're coming from some distant nebula...
They're not, Hayward. Huh? They originate somewhere on the edge of our solar system. We place the point of origin at a distance of no more than 500,000 million miles.
You mean just beyond the orbit of the farthest planet from the sun, Pluto?
Just so. The edge of outer space.
Good.
Listen to this. Hear it for yourself.
There's meaning, intelligence behind that sound.
And I'll tell you something else. Garrick has worked for months on the breakdown graphs. An organized system is emerging. It's a code, and he believes he's on the way to breaking it.
But good heavens, of course, any kind of common word language is out of the question. If it had to be some other way of transmitting ideas, it could be figures, theorems, atomic numbers, the linear spectrum, things constant to all matter everywhere. Mathematics, after all, is a universal language.
Just so.
Good heavens,
You know, if we're right, Hayward, this is an event of tremendous importance.
Have you made any statements?
No. Communication with some other intelligence beyond the Earth. We've got to be very sure.
Oh, Campbell, this is fascinating. I must go over it with you in the smallest detail.
Once we can find the basic key, that's a voice we are hearing, a small voice speaking to us across space, we must learn to understand it. We must.
Well, I gave a brief account of the evening's activities to our two young people and let them hear the signals. And then for the next 3 days that followed, we thought of little else. We spent them either in the underground laboratory or in the high control room beneath the telescope, poring over the neatly filed rolls of squared paper. And on went that jagged red line, saying so much, but then meaning so little to us. On the third day, McLaren and I wanted to work alone, so Clifford and Elizabeth took the brief opportunity to look over the island. They explored the harbour at Kirkuish, took snapshots, and ended up in the evening at the small stone inn near the jetty.
Any good at darts, Cliff?
Heck no, that crazy little board, I can't even hit it.
But I'll take you on at ice hockey any time.
It's not played much in pubs, I'm afraid.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening, landlord. Usual for you, Liz?
Yes, please.
One tomato juice and a half of draft.
One tomato juice and a half of draft.
Well, Cliff, we have walked into something.
We certainly have. But nobody sane believes that any other planet beyond Mars can possibly support any life beyond a few fungi and mosses.
Too far from the sun. No light, no heat. And beyond Pluto, half a billion miles. There's nothing out there. Just freezing darkness and nothing.
Well, that's what the book says. But let's just hope, for the sake of professional dignity, that those signals don't turn out to be mixed-up dance music from Radio Istanbul or somewhere.
Somehow, I don't think they will, Cliff.
Neither do I. There's something about that noise that gave me the creeps around the back of my neck.
One tomato juice and a half of draft. That will be 1 and 9, please, sir.
Right. 1 and 9. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Well, cheers.
Cheers.
The young lady and yourself will be concerned with the contraption, no doubt.
That's right. Hey, just listen to that wind out there. Landlord, are there ever days here when you could keep a hat on?
Oh, yes. But this is the third winter, so there will be bad weather.
The third winter? What's that?
It is the time when the Kirkuish monster visits us.
The Kirkuish monster?
It is a fisherman's story. It is said a sea monster returns to Skara every third year and swims round it, bringing ill weather and driving off the fish.
Have you seen him? Or does he only appear when no one's looking?
It is a story. They say the place to watch from is Drumeard Point on the north of the island. No, I cannot say that I have seen the monster, but then I cannot say that I have not.
I see.
Well, I think it's time we were getting back, Cliff.
Okay, Liz. Good night, landlord.
Good night, sir.
Good night. We'll look out for the monster?
Aye. Seamus.
Aye.
I have been wondering, are the dead fish being washed in again? Yes, I had heard that they were.
Our work continued. I saw McLaren's point. There was no hard proof. We might cause a sensation and then have to admit to chasing a theory. But the proof then was closer than any of us imagined. It was nearly a week later on a grey afternoon when Clifford and Elizabeth were following a cliff path on the north side of the island.
This is Dromaird Point. Goodness, it's bleak and lonely.
Yeah.
Just the rocks and the cold breakers falling in from the Atlantic. Up here, you could almost start believing those fishermen's stories.
Now, Liz, do you really believe that's the scientific approach?
Well, it's supposed to be our inquiring minds that got us here. I just happen to have a little imagination as well.
Well, my imagination never works so good with my ears half frozen on.
Oh, poor old Cliff. Cliff?
Yeah?
Look there.
Where?
Look at the sea. Just beyond the last of those rocks, where all the gulls are gathering. There's a big circle of foam.
Hey, you're right, there is. Must be a couple of hundred yards across. Water's all churned up. Almost looks like it's boiling. Which today, I would say, is unlikely.
Did you hear that?
Yeah. And I felt it through the rock we're standing on.
I'm sure it's coming from out there.
That's quite some disturbance. Can't be volcanic, not here. Hey, and get a look at those waves coming in.
Those gulls, Cliff. Which fish are they diving for? They're snatching them from the surface. They look as if they're dead ones.
Yeah, they sure do. Hey, Liz, you know that spot isn't far below the tide line. And the tide's going out. Now, I reckon it'll be uncovered in another hour. We could walk out to it. Sure, let's do that. Let's stay around for a while and do it. I guess this was just about the place. But there's not a thing here now.
Just firm, wet sand. And the gulls have gone. I've never seen such a lonely place. What could it have been, Cliff?
Oh, maybe just an eddy, some freak local current. But there seemed to be force there. Something pretty powerful.
Well, my feet are getting wet, so let's go.
Hey, hold it. Can you hear that, Liz? It's a kind of humming.
Yes. It's underneath the sand. I'm sure it is. Look, it's vibrating the seawater in that pool. Cliff, what is it?
Well, I'd need more than three guesses. And for something that hums, this is some place for it to be. Hey, this sand is soft enough. It wouldn't take us long to scoop a hole.
What with?
Hands, girl, hands. The best tools in the world. Only four are better than two.
All right. Cliff, you don't suppose we could be teasing an old mine, do you?
Mines rust up. It could be we're sitting on top of something else. The lair of the Kirkuish monster. Had you thought of that?
Is it? Oh, a great fat lugworm. Oh, it's hopeless. As fast as we make the hole bigger, it fills up with water. I'm getting soaked. We need spades.
Well, it can't be down so deep. Try and keep going, Liz.
Oh, there goes a nail. Cliff, I broke it on something hard.
Hey, just let the sand settle. Yeah, do you see it? There's some kind of curved edge. Let me get down there. It goes down quite a way.
It looks like a circular metal plate. It's covered with tiny shellfish.
Yeah, marine crustacei. Sea deposit. Must have been submerged for years. Now we're getting to it, Liz. You feel that vibration? The thing's going like a dynamo.
Cliff, don't touch it anymore. I don't like it. You can see what it is now, can't you?
Yeah, I guess so. The end. It's about 3 feet across, and it runs quite a way under the sand. It's a cylinder. An enormous, great cylinder.
From London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Hayes. Episode 2, The Cylinder.
This is Tom Lambert. You've now heard the first of the tape recordings made by Dr. Hayward Petrie. In it, he described his visit to Skara in the Hebrides, where Professor McLaren was in charge of the giant radio telescope, the strange pattern of signals that were being monitored, and the finding, in a lonely cove, of a vibrating cylindrical object. Already the thing we would come to fear was taking shape. In this, the second recording, Dr. Petrie continues his notes from that point.
Notes, reel 2. Where was I? Oh, yes, that blustering day on Skara. McLaren and I were at work in the underground monitoring room when Clifford and Elizabeth returned from Dromed Point. Returned with a curious account of a cylinder buried under a beach. They seemed so impressed that we took McLaren's ancient car and drove round the coast to see for ourselves. Before we left, Clifford insisted on collecting 4 spades. There was the cold, deserted bay and the beach. We were led down a cliff path and shown a spot where they had scratched out the sand. We each took a spade and dug, and in less than an hour, we had uncovered a most remarkable object.
Well, what on earth would you make of that, Hayward?
It's a cylindrical shape, all right. 3 feet in diameter and about 8 feet long. But what it is under all that encrustation...
Could it be some kind of natural formation?
Well, it's very regular. It almost looks like part of a pillar. But this is hardly an archaeological site. Clifford, you say you heard a humming sound.
Well, yes. I guess it must have stopped while we were away. But Liz heard it, too.
And there was that disturbance while the sea was still covering it.
Yeah.
Very curious. Well... What now? The tide will cover this spot again before long.
Well, we've enough on our hands, but I suppose this is worth spending a little time on. Though what we can do here...
Hey, can I make a suggestion?
Go ahead.
I noticed a crane truck back at the telescope.
Yes, the transporter for heavy equipment.
Well, the road meets the beach farther along.
So it does.
The crane and maybe some chain tackle. Well, look, I've driven bulldozers back home. I guess I can handle that.
Well, it's the only way we'll ever get this thing out. All right with you, Campbell?
Yes, of course.
Very well. It's your operation, Clifford. Oblige me by not breaking your neck over it.
No, sir.
Or that crane, because that's something the college will have to pay for.
I'll be careful, sir.
I gave no more thought to the object until the following afternoon. Then, looking down from the telescope control room, I saw the transporter pull up by the generator block. Clifford emerged from the cab and supervised the efforts of 3 resigned islanders he'd pressed into service to haul the cylinder into the building. It seemed his salvage scheme had been successful, and that the object was lighter than I had imagined. That same evening, we found Clifford, Elizabeth, and Peter Garrick in one of the basement rooms, surveying their trophy with some pride. They had mounted it on trestles, and Garrick was armed with a hammer and a cold chisel. Lying there under the hard, white strip lights, the corroded cylinder might well have been the corpse of some hoary sea beast.
This really is interesting. I've been taking measurements. The ends are perfect circles, 34 inches in diameter, and slightly domed. It's 90 inches long. If I can chip away some of these deposits, we can see what it's made of.
Well, if it turns out to be solid gold, let us know. We'll be up in the signal box.
Right, son.
I'd be glad if you'd come and take some notes, Clifford.
Yes, sir.
And you, Elizabeth.
Yes, sir.
I'll be up shortly. I'll just make a start on this.
Leaving young Garrick chipping away, we went up in the lift to the glass-walled control room beneath the vast bowl of the telescope. And again we watched the dancing green traces on the oscilloscopes and listened to those thin, insistent signals reaching us across 5,000 million miles of space.
Hello. That sequence sounds familiar. Where's Garrick's chart? He's taken photographs of all the recurring waveforms. Yes, this looks like it.
It's very similar.
We got this on August 9th last.
And before that on May the 3rd.
You see, Hayward, it is systematic. There's method, intelligence behind this.
Intelligence? But that means life in some form. Life on the outermost edge of the solar system, where no life can conceivably exist.
Because of the conditions. Unimaginable cold, utter darkness.
Poisonous atmosphere of methane and ammonia.
Yes, no life as we understand it.
I wonder.
Another layer underneath. Gray like fused metal. And hard. Can't make a mark on it. It beats me how a thing like this came to be on the... What? Oh, yes. They said this happened before. Must be some kind of stored energy inside. What was I going to... I can't think with it. Oh, it's cold. I suppose I ought to... What? What's that? How did it get in? I must get through to...
Man.
Look at his hand.
Gary, can you hear me? What happened?
Oh, the mist. Cold. Oh, it's you, Doctor. My hand, it's burning.
Has he burnt it?
No, cold has done that. Extreme cold. I think it's come very near to being frostbitten. Here, take my jacket. Wrap his arm up in it.
Peter, what was it?
Well, I was chipping the crust away, and then the humming started.
The humming?
It came from inside. Not loud, but I couldn't think straight. And then suddenly there was a kind of fog everywhere.
Fog?
I leaned against the cylinder and it was like touching a red-hot stove. And after that, I don't know.
You reached the alarm bell, laddie, and passed out. We saw that vapor too when we came in. Places like a refrigerator now, but outside it's clear.
Well, another mystery for our collection, Campbell. Your cosmic noise, and now this. Hello. That's curious.
What are you staring at?
Well, that shelf. There were some things on it earlier. A couple of spare transformers, a pair of pliers. Has anyone moved them?
I didn't. No one else has been down here.
Well, perhaps I'm mistaken. I could have sworn. Well, this is a remarkable find of yours, Clifford. Now we shall have to investigate it. Because I'm sure of one thing. It's not solid. There is something inside it. Later that night, we held a conference. The cylinder clearly possessed some disturbing properties. At Kirkuish, there were no facilities for investigating it thoroughly, but in my own modern laboratory at the college, well, with some regret, I proposed that we return to London and somehow take the cylinder with us. McLaren agreed. He was as curious as myself, but could spare no more time from his study of the signals. Well, a lot of arranging had to be done, but Clifford and Elizabeth did their share, and 3 days later we left Skara on the island steamer. The cylinder went with us, cradled in straw and enclosed inside a stout crate. Even as I watched it being hoisted aboard at Kirkuish, the case swinging from the derrick had an oddly forbidding appearance. Why I should have felt that then, I don't know. But all the way back to Glasgow, it was just a confoundedly awkward piece of luggage. However, eventually we were relaxing on the express to London, with our trophy safely stowed in the luggage van at the rear of the train. Out of sight, but hardly out of mind.
Peter Garrick was much better when we left.
Yeah. The doc on the island thought he was lucky not to have lost his fingers. I don't get it, sir. What could have caused a sudden temperature drop like that?
I've no idea, Clifford. But we mustn't go leaping to any science fiction conclusion. Possibly some freak condition peculiar to that cellar. And then the humming from the cylinder. Well, certain elements can resonate in magnetic fields. There was a lot of electrical equipment nearby.
But there wasn't on that beach.
And that mist, something about the way it moved.
It's the material that interests me. Under the sea crust that Garrick chipped away, there was another layer, rough and metallic. It reminded me of something that...
We're slowing down. Stopping. It can't be Carlisle yet.
May I see the tickets, please? Thank you. Thanks. Oh, thank you, sir.
What have we stopped for, Inspector?
Oh, seems they're having a little trouble up front with the locomotive.
One of the new diesels, isn't it?
Yes, but it hasn't been pulling properly for the last few miles.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Losing power, a motor fault, I suppose. If the motormen can't trace it, we'll have to get a relief sent up from Carlisle. We hope the delay won't be too long.
Yes, I wonder.
What is it, Doctor? Anything wrong?
I don't know. These last few days, perhaps I'm getting foolish ideas. Anyway, it won't do any harm to make sure. Will you two come with me? I'm going down to the luggage van.
Yes, sure. Of course.
Just a moment, sir. Looking for something?
You have a crate of mine in here, guard. Would you mind if we take a look at it?
That'll be all right. That big fellow, isn't it? Machinery of some sort.
Machinery? What makes you think that?
Oh, I heard a sort of humming sound noise somewhere back.
Where?
Oh, seemed to be coming from the case. Thought perhaps some electrical gadget had managed to switch itself on. Stopped after a bit, though.
Hey, here it is. Hasn't exploded anything. Just the same as it was when it came aboard at Glasgow.
Cliff, it isn't. The crate's a different colour. Why is the wood white like that?
Search me.
Oh, funny sort of weather, this. Of course, you get all sorts up north this time of year. But it turned so blooming cold in here about a quarter of an hour ago. I had to put my coat on. Fair nipped my ears, too. Ah, oh, we're off again.
Doctor, it seems to be covered in some kind of powder.
No, don't touch it again, my dear. Come away from it. That's not powder. It's frost. The rest of the journey after that was uneventful. At Euston, six porters heaved the crate onto a waiting lorry sent from the college, and we followed to Kensington in a taxi. The college was empty and echoing, as it always is in vacation time, and the smell of dust and age had come back into its own. With the aid of two boilermen and Simmons, the head caretaker, we took the crate up in the goods lift and dragged it through the silent corridors to my laboratory. It was late in the afternoon. We were tired. But any idea of waiting until the next day to begin work just didn't occur to us. We dismantled the crate and mounted the cylinder on a long workbench, wedging it with wooden blocks and arranged floodlights to work by. The first thing I did was to examine the place where Garrick had flaked away the white coating of sea growth. Yes. This was the surface before the Atlantic started on it, as it was probably when it first became submerged. Grey, hard, and honeycombed with small bubbles. From these streaks, I should say traces of iron, copper, and nickel.
It looks almost like a volcanic rock. Lava.
No, no, this has been fused by a much higher temperature. Now, what... Yes, of course. I know where I've seen this before. On the surface of meteorites.
Meteorites? But they get scorched up.
Entering the Earth's atmosphere, yes. Well, the condition is similar. Clifford.
Sir?
Get the keys from Simmons and go down to the engineering department.
Okay.
Find some mallets and chisels. The heavier the better. What I want to know is, what is underneath this? For 4 hours under those glaring lamps, we chipped away like three sculptors inspired. Only we had no conception of what was taking shape under our tools. Beneath the outer crust was a solid layer, an inch thick, of fused mineral matter. When we had cleared one end of the cylinder, we attacked that. And that, too, we eventually got through to bare metal, bright silver, a metal cylinder. Our basic question was answered. It cannot have formed naturally. Whatever it was, it had been constructed. For a long time, we contemplated that smooth, gleaming surface. We had no suggestions, no theories. And then, it seemed the only thing to do, we began to enlarge the area we had uncovered. Outside, the lamps came on in Cromwell Road and theatre-bound taxis hustled on their way. By 8 o'clock, we had bared one entire end of the cylinder. There it lay, bright under the lights, like the end of a monstrous metal cigar case. At 8:10, I laid my mallet and chisel on the bench. Well, no point in going on with this all night. It will take days to clear the whole surface. And then the only way in will be with an oxyacetylene torch. No, it's going to be a long job. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily one for us.
How do you mean?
Well, I'm beginning to wonder whether we mayn't be risking blowing ourselves and the college sky high.
Some wartime beauty, you mean, that got washed up on Scarra. Yeah, we thought of that on the beach.
It's possible. I think first we ought to have an expert opinion. I suppose the Ministry of Works are the people.
But a bomb, a rusty mine, could that cause anything to happen now? I mean, what we saw?
I don't know, Elizabeth. It seems about as sinister now as a stick of Brighton rock. Look, I think we should all go home. Tomorrow we'll reconsider it. Will you both be here at 11?
Certainly.
Good. Put those lights out, will you, Elizabeth?
Right. Here's your coat, Doctor.
Thank you. We can leave everything as it is. You're coming, Clifford?
Hmm? Oh, yeah, sure. Don't forget your briefcase, Liz.
No, thanks for reminding.
We went down in the lift across the dark entrance hall with its spreading dome and enormous crystal chandelier, and I said goodnight to my students on the steps outside. Then I hailed a taxi to take me to my house in Eaton Square. Clifford and Elizabeth walked away towards South Kensington Tube Station. It began to rain. 10 minutes later, I understand, they were sitting in a coffee bar in the Fulham Road.
Heck, how do sculptors keep at it? My chisel arm's stiffening up already. Well, what now?
8:30. You can take me to the pictures if you like.
A movie at this time? Liz, you surely can throw off the cares of the working day.
No point in brooding over this. We have some unexplained phenomena, an unidentified object. It just means experimenting until we find the answers.
Just like that. And I'm the one without imagination. Me, I keep thinking of that enormous great thing sitting up there like an overturned idol.
Almost as if it's watching us. How silly. Just a slab of metal.
Yeah. You know, Petrie didn't notice it. Could be just a scratch. On the other hand, if there is a way in...
What do you mean?
Well, I guess I should have mentioned it to the prof. I'm never going to sleep with this on my mind. And it won't take long to check. You coming?
Where to?
Back to the college.
What, now?
Yeah. Simmons will open up for me. Just a question of whether it's a line or a crack.
A line or a crack?
Yeah. Come on. Hey, swing that lamp a bit this way, will you?
All right.
Yeah, fine. Hey, this is it, Liz. Do you see here a thin line running right around the end of the cylinder? Ah, this wire's too thick. I know. Cigarette paper, that's it. Now, the thing is, will it... Yeah. Yeah, it slides in. It is a crack, and deep.
In the end, this whole section must be... Wait, Cliff, listen. Someone's coming. Who can it be? Not Simmons, he doesn't walk like that.
Shh, wait.
Well, it would appear that great minds do think alike.
Dr. Petrie, we had no idea you were...
Coming back? Neither had I until I got home and tried to forget all this. What an odd thing curiosity is. For some reason, I felt this shouldn't wait. You do, I imagine.
Well, not exactly, sir. I noticed this earlier on.
What?
This hairline around the circumference. I've tested it, and it's a crack.
A crack?
Yeah. So this whole end section could be kind of a plug. It could come off.
Well done, Clifford. This is important.
You see, It won't move or turn. Yeah. But there's something else here on the end face. Two holes about a foot apart.
Yes. Sockets for a key. If we can find something to fit them.
The engineering floor.
Oh, of course.
They have every kind of plate key down there. I'll be right back.
All right, good man. Now, if this end is removable, it's been made so for a purpose. And that, Elizabeth, can only be...
Because there is something inside.
Yes. It seemed an age before Clifford returned with an assortment of bronze steel keys. We found one that fitted the sockets exactly. Even as I felt its grip, I hesitated. Should we go on? Should we take a calculated risk? Looking back on that night, I can understand why none of us seriously considered doing anything else. We understood so little then. Clifford and I hauled on the key. After a few seconds, the whole end of the cylinder began to turn. A few inches, and then it stuck. We threw our weight on it, and then it was turning freely. A fine, polished thread crept slowly into sight. The gap between the plug and the casing steadily widened.
I think we're nearly there. Better be ready to catch this when it comes clear.
Yes, turn slowly. Elizabeth, stand back, please. Clifford, stop a moment.
Something wrong?
I want to listen. Escaping gas.
anything. No, nothing. All right. Go on, very slowly.
Yeah. It's coming.
Now hold it, don't let it drop.
I've got it. Now let it down. That's it.
Elizabeth, quickly, can you see anything?
It's hollow. There's a cavity. But it seems to be empty.
What? Yes. A hollow barrel about 18 inches across.
Hey, look at the thickness of that casing.
9 inches of solid metal at least. This doesn't go in very far. There's something blocking it. Elizabeth, bring that lamp down here. That's it. Now. Yes. The hole goes in for about a foot, and then just a shiny surface.
It looks like glass. Green.
Listen. There it is. That humming.
Is that what you heard before?
Yes, but much louder.
I don't understand it. This enormous thing and nothing inside, but... Unless... Bring the lamp nearer. No, nearer, nearer. Yes. It must be.
Well, what else can there be? There's no other way in.
But don't you see? That green substance, it's solid. And it isn't attached to the casing. It must run the full length inside.
You mean...
The cylinder is just a shell, a container, to protect some kind of inner core, something green and hard.
Polished to a perfect fit that could be slid in.
And then the casing kept and sealed, and that'll keep it intact for, well, any sort of journey.
If it went in like that...
It should come out the same way.
Doctor, you said a journey. How long a journey? Where's this thing come from?
I don't know, Elizabeth, and at the moment we'd better not speculate. We can't turn back now. We must know the truth for, well, for better or worse.
But how can we drag it out? There's nothing to get a grip on.
There might be a way. Yes, look, that roof span up there, some chain and a pulley.
Yeah, upend the casing and lift it off.
It's the only way. Come on. We worked feverishly into the early hours. Again, we raided the engineering department, dragging up hooks, chains, and pulley blocks. We rigged a tackle over the cylinder, attaching the block to the steel span which crossed overhead, and shackled the lifting chain securely round and closed the end. And all the time, the thing on the bench continued to hum, softly and insistently. The chains swung and tightened. Slowly, the massive cylinder reared upright on the bench. There was a terrifying moment when it rocked and almost toppled, but then it settled firmly on its open end. There was a slither and a thud. The core had shifted. We went on dragging at the chain. The pulley clattered and our hands became slippery with grease. With nerve-wracking slowness, the casing rose, exposing inch by inch the thing it contained and guarded. Was a rod, an enormous green rod. It was solid and transparent, but embedded in it was a fantastic tracery of fine silvery wires, a glittering spider's web of strange branching patterns, and every gleaming vein converged to one point, a hollow cavity in the heart of the crystalline mass, a round bubble containing something gray and bulbous. Something that looked like a fine sponge. Something which expanded and contracted rhythmically, pulsing with fierce, vital energy.
From London, we present Orbit 10, a play in 6 episodes by Peter Elliott Hayes. Episode 3, The Power.
This is Tom Lambert again.
You have now heard two of the tape recordings made by Dr. Petrie. His account of bringing the strange corroded cylinder found beneath a Hebridean beach to London, how it was found to be hollow, and the way in which Petrie and his two students lifted off the outer casing to discover, well, perhaps I may repeat the doctor's own words, a transparent green rod, solid, but embedded in it a fantastic tracery of fine silvery wires, and every gleaming vein converging to a hollow cavity, a bubble containing something like a sponge, something that pulsed with vital energy. There now we rejoined them in the college laboratory, 3 a.m, their eyes fixed, fascinated, on the thing on the bench. Here is the third recording.
Notes, reel 3. So now we knew. This was what had lain under the sand all those years, with the grey Atlantic washing to and fro above it. It was an incredible object we stared at, but it had beauty too, that limpid green pillar, with its gossamer tracery of metal threads. We stayed there talking for a while. I made a mental note to get in touch in the morning with the head of the college, Sir Edward Bancroft. He was a physicist. I thought it would interest him. Then I locked the double laboratory doors. We walked to the lift, and once again we descended to the darkened entrance hall. There was no sound in the whole of the sprawling, empty building. And yet, as we reached the doors, there was something else. Elizabeth heard it first.
Doctor, what's that? That jingling sound?
Seems to be coming from somewhere overhead.
Yes, it's in the dome, I think.
I can feel something, too, a kind of vibration.
Good heavens, look, it's the chandelier. The whole thing's quivering. It started to swing.
Something's shaking the whole building.
There's dust drifting down.
Look out, it's dropping!
We raced back to the laboratory. There, a scene from a nightmare met us. The whole room had changed. The floors, the walls, every piece of apparatus, everything was furred with crisp, glinting frost. A bitter cold pricked our faces. But the frost was not white. It was a livid green, coloured by the light that glared from the rod on the bench. Then, near us suddenly, something swirled, grey and curling. It was a swathe of mist, appearing from nowhere. Then another and another. It was twisting, thickening between us. Across the laboratory, on the far wall, a black line suddenly snaked and forked. A crack. It opened steadily, gaped. And then the oak workbench beneath the rod seemed to crumble and dissolve. The rod lurched, toppled, and as it fell, the entire laboratory floor sagged and collapsed, leaving a vast, yawning abyss. The rod, still flaring, plunged through.
Surpassed yourself this time. Oh, I wish your department could find other ways of bringing its work to my notice.
Oh.
There was a bomb through the roof in the war. Didn't make half this mess. 40-foot hole up there, and as for the lecture theatre here...
No, I can't say how sorry I am, Edward. To say now, I don't know what happened. Well, it's... Well, it's the truth. I've told you what little we know. What that cylinder is, how it functions. I confess I've no clear idea. As for all this mess, well, we've seen it can resonate powerfully and set up severe vibrations.
Yeah.
Somehow, I suppose, they found structural weaknesses in the building. Cracks started. We saw them opening, and then the floor gave way.
Now, wait, Hayward. This isn't a barn full of dry rot. These floors are reinforced concrete.
I know that.
That exhibit of yours came through like a 16-inch shell. Look at those girders sheared through like so many cucumbers. And the bench it was standing on, we haven't found a trace of it.
But a lot of grey dust.
Yes.
It's a strange business, Edward. And the rod itself, not even cracked. When we get it out, we must arrange precautions and close it somehow. In its cylinder for the time being, and then, Well, I don't know.
Yes. Well, we can't afford too many experiments on this scale.
No, but we must go at this systematically, take readings, samples, and above all, watch.
Yes. Well, I want to know the answers to this, Hayward, however disturbing they may be. I think you understand.
Yes, yes.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
Hmm?
Good morning. May I have a word?
Well?
I believe, sir, you're Dr. Petrie.
Yes. And who, young man, might you be? I don't care for the look of that notebook.
Oh, it's pretty harmless if you don't tease it. Tom Lambert. Here's my press card.
What?
We had a report there'd been an explosion here.
There has been no explosion.
Well, what's all this, then? Death Watch Beetle?
An experiment. It got out of control. A floor gave way. That is all, Mr. Lambert. A floor gave way.
Oh. And the chandelier in the entrance hall, another experiment?
Yes, it fell. The chain was rusted away. The vibration...
The vibration. Yes, I see. Vibration. And, that green object sticking out of the wreckage, a part of the experiment?
I don't wish to say any more about it at the moment.
You're doing secret work here while the students are away.
I didn't say that.
Look, Doctor, I write a popular science column.
Oh.
I was on the phone yesterday to Professor Campbell McLaren on the island of Skara.
What for?
I wanted to do an article about the radio telescope. He mentioned in passing an interesting thing. That you had made a rather curious find up there and brought it back to London. Now, that green thing, I suppose that wouldn't be it.
You can suppose just what you like, Mr. Lambert.
Okay, perhaps you won't mind if I clamber over and just take a quick deco.
If you do, young man, I shall not hesitate to take my walking stick to your back. Furthermore, unless you remove yourself from these premises in 2 minutes flat, I'll have you thrown out. Do I make myself clear?
Okay, if that's how you feel about it. But we appreciate cooperation and...
We appreciate privacy.
All right, all right. But you know, gentlemen, newspapers are like elephants. They don't forget. Every news item is filed. We have quite a system. Useful for looking up odd things. If you ever want me, you'll know where to find me. Good morning.
Well, I'm blessed.
By late afternoon, we succeeded in replacing the green rod in its casing and screwing home the plug. So dull and harmless now, it seemed impossible that... However, that evening I invited Elizabeth and Clifford to dinner at my house. For 3 hours we discussed the problem and were no wiser when we'd finished. Then I remembered a note my housekeeper said had been delivered by messenger earlier. I opened it. Inside was a column cut from a newspaper and a visiting card. The name? Thomas Lambert. A date was typed on the clipping, January 1952. And it made curious reading. I handed it over to Clifford.
More disturbance in disused pit. Families living near the abandoned Llanwithlyn Colliery in the Rhondda Valley are again wondering what's happening a mile below their back gardens. For the third time in 5 years, unaccountable rumbling sounds have been heard inside the old workings, which were discontinued in 1945. Coal board experts say subsidences are to be expected, but veteran miners shake their heads. Llanwithlyn, they say, has always been a wicked pit. They have not forgotten the disastrous collapses that occurred in 1907, 1917, and again in 1927. And there are other sounds that puzzle even the experts.
Rumbling sounds.
So an old coal mine is caving in. What does Lambert expect us to do about that?
Well, I imagine to connect them with... Well, there is some slight similarity to the things we've observed.
True.
But nothing significant. Why should Lambert suppose there could be? I suppose I'd better telephone him in the morning, if only to get rid of him. Now, Clifford, what I propose is this. A new laminated plastic has recently been developed. It's called densolite.
Uh-huh.
It's light, almost transparent, and it effectively screens most known forms of radiation. Well, I intend to have a cabinet made, a cubicle to house the rod, made entirely of densolite.
Good idea.
I know a firm who'll do it. Then we can study it in safety. It'll be harmless enough inside 2 inches of densolite.
Well, let's hope so.
I think we'd better make a sketch of what we need. Clifford, you'll find some paper on the desk there.
I'll get it, sir.
The next morning was bright and frosty. We spent it at a small factory in Wembley, which manufactured laboratory apparatus. We were promised a densolite cubicle to my exact requirements in 3 days. I left Clifford and Elizabeth at Hyde Park and went home. Then I remembered about telephoning Thomas Lambert. Reluctantly, I did. And another part of the weird pattern began to fall into place.
That's all right, Doctor. Thought you might be interested, though. I started digging through our files again.
Again?
Oh, yeah. For 2 years now, I've been doing a little research of my own. I have some notes I'd like you to see. But the first thing is, when shall we go?
Go? Go where?
Llanwethlyn, South Wales. There are 2 buses a day from Swansea.
Now, look, Lambert, I'm not rushing off on wild goose chases on the strength of some bumps in a Welsh coal mine.
Dr. Petrie, I went down that pit in 1952. I heard those bumps. They've started again recently. I have a feeling you wouldn't be wasting your time. Anyway, look, I'll be at Paddington Station at 7:30 tomorrow. There's a Cardiff train at 7:55. If you're not there, well, I'll go home and write about chemical fertilizers. Goodbye.
Lambert. Well, I've met some irritating young men, but... Oh! I was annoyed with myself, but of course I was at Paddington the next morning. So was Lambert, cheerful and unapologetic. In the dining car, he opened a briefcase and showed me a file of press cuttings, some of them already turning yellow. They were certainly of some interest. All reports of vague phenomena similar to the one that he had sent me. Lincolnshire, North Devon, Westmorland, Kent. Conflicting, contradictory, inconsistent. A scrapbook of rumours, tall stories and sensation hunting. That being so, why was I beginning to feel so curiously uneasy? At 4 o'clock, we alighted from a country bus at Llanethlyn. A bitter wind slanted down the bleak mining valley, across the slate-roofed terraces and earth-dips, giant conical molehills overgrown with weed. The spidery wheel over the Llanwethlyn pithead was still. No steam came from the black chimney of the winch house. Lambert and I picked our way among oily puddles and found the pitkeeper in the old flint store hut where once the miners had collected their helmets and safety lamps. We explained who we were and what we'd come for. Mr. Morgan did not seem over-impressed.
The noises again, is it? Toot, the old pit will be famous if this keeps up indeed. Gentlemen from the call board with black suits and bowler hats. Lovely they were. And reporters. And even a lady from the BBC. Talked beautiful, just like the wireless she did. Well, she's been quiet today. The old pit, you know. And quiet she was yesterday. Yes. Yes, it's about now she will start, if she's going to.
Mr. Morgan took us to the pit head, through an iron door in the brick wall that had been built round it. Then we were gazing down into the shaft, square and narrow, dropping away into echoing darkness. For over an hour we stood and shivered, while Mr. Morgan rolled stringy-looking cigarettes, smoked them, and threw them into the pit as if it were his own private ashtray. Well, then, I'd had enough and said so. Lambert shrugged. We were just turning away.
Yes, there she goes. Never quiet now for more than a few days, see? Don't stand too near the edge, man. The shake will be coming in a minute. Here it is.
Feel it, Doctor? The vibration? That's coming from at least half a mile down. Well, does it remind you of anything?
What do you expect me to say, Lambert? That's what it could be, anything.
Could it? And that. Listen carefully.
Yes, there is another sound. Some resemblance, I suppose, to...
To what your students heard on the Isle of Skara. Doctor, is it the same?
The call board, gentlemen, think it's water in the old workings, flooding, bringing down the galleries. But I'm not so sure.
Well, something happens down there. You can feel... Hey, hold it!
Dear, bad today it was. And another crack in the shaft wall... I shall have to report that 3 copies.
What are you staring at, Doctor? I thought you weren't impressed.
That crack. The way it suddenly opened. That's something I have seen before.
Well, seems to be over.
Yes.
Well, if we move, maybe we can get the same bus back to Swansea.
Oh, then I lock up. Oh, some tales are told about Llanwellyn Pit. For years I worked here on the coal face when I was a lad, and my old dad, he cut coal all his life down there.
Look, Mr. Morgan...
I could tell you things, man...
Perhaps another time,
my
Mr. Morgan,
old dad,
we
you see, he was one of the first to get a real look at the light.
Mr. Morgan, the bus.
Oh, the bus. Yes, you must be going.
Lambert, wait.
Hmm?
Light, Mr. Morgan, in the mine. What sort of light?
Well, man, I don't know whether it was his eyesight or the four ale bar of the miner's rest, but he used to swear, solemn, that a coal seam in the east working used to light up sometimes with a creepy green light that hurt you to look at it.
Creepy green light. My first action next day after parting from Lambert at Paddington was to go and look at the cylinder now lying in the college basement in Kensington. Still, silent, it seemed harmless enough. I went up to my study and sat there alone for some time. I had much food for thought. Then I made one telephone call to an old colleague of mine, Dr. Trevor Hughes of Cardiff University. He promised, if he could find the time, to make certain inquiries for me. Then the growing jungle of papers on my desk brought me back to earth, so I forced recent events from my mind and got down to it. But it wasn't easy, with the sounds of the workmen a few rooms away repairing my shattered laboratory. It was a week later that our examination of the cylinder began in earnest. By that time, the densolite cubicle had arrived. Something between a massive telephone kiosk and an upended greenhouse. Thick slabs of densolite riveted together, one hinged to form a door that could be secured on the outside with a steel bar. The cylinders hauled up from the basement, the rod again extracted, and installed upright in the cabinet. When we at last dropped the securing bar into place, the whole thing looked exactly like some odd museum exhibit in a glass case. We arranged instruments to detect and record sound, temperature, and radioactivity. The days passed. The recording pens drew only monotonous straight red lines on the creeping graph paper. The meter needles didn't as much as flicker. We sketched and photographed the embedded wiring system from every angle and pored over it for hours. I even entered the cubicle and attempted to break away a fragment of the rod for analysis, but my mallet glanced off the gleaming surface without leaving a scratch. Oh, it's no good. It's quite incredibly hard. Close the cubicle, Clifford.
Okay.
I tried a surface analysis. I couldn't get any sort of reaction.
Yes. An unknown substance. An unknown function. Well, all we can do now is watch and keep on watching.
Yeah, we could take it in shifts. Keep up observation all around the clock.
Yes. The moment anything starts to happen, someone must be on hand to report it. Apart from the densolite, the rod is in the open again, unshielded by its cylinder. Will you help out, Elizabeth?
Yes, of course.
We'll make my study our headquarters.
Yes?
And for safety's sake, we'll fix up an electric buzzer which can be sounded from here. Just in case of emergency.
Good.
Then we'll work out a duty rotor and keep an instrument reading log.
Quite a combined operation.
Well, we've seen once what can happen. We must be ready. Our only chance of understanding more about this is to see it in operation.
And hope the densolite is all it's claimed to be.
Yes. That's something we must take a chance on. And from now on, no one is to go into the cubicle. That bar is not to be lifted for any reason. I had a camp bed put in my study and took up permanent residence there. The three of us kept our vigil in six-hour shifts, living on flasks of hot coffee and sandwiches. It was a thankless routine, but it had to be done. The next entry in my notes is for Thursday, the 19th of November. Yes, that Thursday night. It was round about 11 o'clock. Clifford was on duty in the laboratory, nearing the end of his watch.
Elizabeth Ryder and I were working together in my study. She'd come off duty earlier in the evening, but had declined to go home. Outside, it was raining steadily. The lamps in Cromwell Road had damp halos round them. I was going over my notes, and Elizabeth, as I recall, was browsing through a ponderous textbook she had illicitly removed from the college library.
Oh, how's it going, Doctor?
Well, I've been cataloguing all the data we've collected so far about the cylinder. Not a lot, but... Well, have a look at it. Read it out.
Right. A. It is extraordinarily hard.
Yes. Composition, we might say, unknown. Go on.
B. It clearly requires energy to operate and to find it.
Yes, but there is no visible source of power. Right.
C. It can emit light.
It can indeed, and very powerfully.
D. It can produce drastic temperature changes.
But always, as we've seen, in sudden drops to many degrees below freezing point. Right, next.
E. It can vibrate, ranging from a mild hum to a very violent pulsation.
Yes, we certainly know all about that.
There's one more. F. The vapor or mist.
Yes. The most mysterious characteristic. Is it caused by the other functions, or is it in some way given out by the cylinder? That seems out of the question. There are no vents or holes in the surface to release it.
And when it comes, it forms so rapidly.
Quite so. Well, that's the lot. Data? No. Just a string of unanswered questions. Elizabeth, are we chasing shadows? Are we dealing in fact or a fiction of our own making?
How do you mean?
Well, we need a theory. All right. That rod is an electronic device.
Yes.
Possibly a component of something bigger. Medical apparatus, perhaps.
Oh.
It fell overboard from some vessel. In time, it was washed ashore on Skara. The action of the tide buried it. It's nothing we recognize or understand, but do we know of every scientific advance made in other countries?
No.
Well, so you see, without a grain of evidence, we promptly start indulging in all manner of sinister forebodings. And we call ourselves scientists.
I suppose, looking at it like that. But there was something else.
What's that?
It's not on your list.
I didn't think I left anything out. Why do you look like that?
That night, when we went in there and found everything white with frost, just before the floor fell in, I don't know if it happened to you or Clifford.
What?
For a few moments, my mind went quite blank.
Gone.
I knew where I was, but I couldn't say or do anything. And there was something about that dreadful noise I wanted to listen to. Some part of it that seemed to mean something.
Yes, I saw you. You were staring right into that green glare, but your eyes were not seeing it.
I can't explain it. But there's not much we can explain, is there?
Oh, you were nearest to it. What's that book you've been looking at?
Oh, Weber's The Human Machine.
Physiology. A little out of our field.
It's that organism inside the rod that puzzles me. I thought perhaps... Oh, but this will take me a year to read.
No, wait a moment. Don't close it. That plate. That illustration. What chapter's that?
The brain and central nervous system.
Elizabeth, look at it. The formation. The structure. Even the colour.
But it can't be. This is a specimen of the human... Doctor! The buzzer from the lab.
There must be Clifford. This can wait. Come on. The 30 yards to the laboratory seemed a mile. We heard the noise before we got there. And when we burst in, the same cold bit at our faces and the same flaring green light stabbed our eyes. Clifford was leaning against a bench, one hand shielding his face, the other pointing urgently at the cubicle. Inside, the rod had come alive once more, a mass of shimmering green luminescence. But there was a change. Now it glowed like the heart of a furnace through swirling gray vapor that choked the cabinet, pressing thickly against the densolite slabs. And inside that green inferno, something moved.
It only started up a minute ago. There's no warning. It was just a flip on the meters. And, well, look at that vapor in there.
The densolite's containing it, thank heaven, keeping it in. We should be safe enough. But what is that moving inside?
It's... A lamp.
A lamp?
Yeah, one of those jointed steel jobs off the bench.
Seth, what on earth is it doing in there?
I said the cubicle was not to be opened.
Yeah, well, I skipped the order. I put it in. I was just trying out a screwy idea. The rod seems to have some effect on solids. And I thought, well, maybe this would be some kind of test.
But that lamp must weigh all of 15 pounds.
And it's being whirled about like a feather. It's hard to see properly, but am I imagining it? Or is it getting smaller?
Holy smoke, Liz, you're right. It is.
Fascinated, disbelieving, we watched. And we saw a miracle. The heavy metal lamp, shade, bulb, stand, and base, dwindled and dwindled in size as it whirled like a straw in the wind. Weightless in the gray vapor, it shrank to a half-size model, keeping its shape perfectly, to a beautiful toy, to a tiny piece of doll's house furniture, and at last to a black speck that danced for a few seconds and then vanished against the glowing surface of the rod. Here was our answer. To the boiling sea on Skara, to the missing objects on the shelf, to the bench that became nothing, and the steel and concrete floor that suddenly opened. Here was the truth beyond science, beyond understanding. The rod had one monstrous, unimaginable power. Utterly and completely, it could absorb solid matter.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoy what I'm doing, I ask you to please subscribe to my channel or channels. Well, hope you enjoyed, and until next time, stay safe, wish you well, peace.